Good morning and welcome to your Friday. You done it. You made it to the long weekend. Congratulations. A slight round of applause for you and all that you do. My name is Matt Rose. Welcome inside. We got three fun hours ahead. Myself and Nick Alberga will do our absolute very best to keep you entertained. And like I said, get you all the way up until 9 o'clock. Then we'll say goodbye. You can enjoy your weekend without us, and we'll be back on Tuesday to talk about everything that happened in the weekend that was in sports. Alex Brody is our outstanding producer today. Good morning, Nick. How you doing, brother?
I'm doing fantastic, my dude. And I think if you want to spend your weekend with us, you can listen to us on the podcast, right?
Yeah. Well, I assume that everyone's already listened to the podcast probably a couple times over. But by all means, you can hit the podcast. Spotify, Google, Amazon, Apple, Kijiji, MySpace,
you your
SoundCloud, mostly the podcatchers, but basically wherever you get podcasts, you can find The Big Show. Just fire it in, The Big Show. It might not say our names on it because we're kind of doing some stuff. But trust me, The Big Show, it's got the Saddle Dome, it's got the Calgary Tower on it. That's our show. That's the one you subscribe to. And you'll never miss an interview. You'll never miss a moment. You'll never miss the morning report. It's really got everything for you.
It's all there in one piece, one file, and a couple files for you. September 2nd, my dude. We are getting closer and closer to rookie camp.
Yes.
NHL training camps kicking off. Like you start to get that feel again when news starts to trickle out every day. And, you know, we had Dave Pagnotta on yesterday, and then Jake Oettinger signs. There's news Kirby Doc's closing in on an extension with the Montreal Canadiens. Adam Rzeczka of the Calgary Flames is one of 13 RFAs still remaining on the board. And I had to text Pat Steinberg and figure out why in the hell this guy's still unsigned. Do you have any theories on this?
Not necessarily. To me, it's one of those things that's probably just going to get done at relatively low money if Adam wants to play this year. This feels like one of those situations where they're like, you know, well, honestly, you came up and you were a body here, but, you know, there were points where, yeah, he showed flashes of things that you like as a consistent NHL player, but the one thing that I always went back to when I was doing the show with Pat and we talked about Rzeczka was consistent intensity. He's a big body, but he doesn't necessarily play like a 6'3", 6'4" frame. He kind of sometimes can be a little bit periphery for me. And like there are some days where he's grinding down low and he's setting guys up and he's got some really nice offensive tools, vision, shooting the puck. He skates pretty well. But there was just times where I'm like, especially for a guy who's just trying to cut his teeth in the NHL, like I want to see you just pedal to the floor every time you're getting a shift, because you have to understand that you're probably never going to get over 15, 14, maybe 13 minutes of ice time in the role that he was in. So that was kind of my that is a real in-depth look at the season that was for Adam Rzeczka at 6:03 on a Friday.
I like that. And, you know, assuming he does sign, and I love the 6:03 factor, it's never too early to talk some Flames puck here on Sportsnet 960. But the bottom six, right? I think we still think there could be a move in this team to potentially sign somebody. Maybe they look at the trade route, as we discussed yesterday, with the influx of defensemen. You know, Evan Rodriguez is a name who's a free agent who's still out there who could make a lot of sense, can play up and down your lineup. The mob boss, Sonny Milano, could be a fit, too. Of course, the beneficiary of the Dishigan last year in Anaheim. Isn't that the best nickname ever that was created by my buddy Boomer Gordon over at NHL Network Radio? The mob boss, because his name's Sonny.
I do like that. Yes. Yeah. Maybe that's not why he's getting signed right now. People are like, oh, man, I don't want to get whacked if we have to send him down to the AHL or something like that. My goodness.
I think we're on to something. So as mentioned, Jake Oettinger signs that deal. I like it. And I think there was always a pathway to a deal. I don't know if you saw a couple days back, but the Stars owner came out and said, yeah, we don't like going long term with guys coming off ELCs. So that pretty nipped it in the bud right away that he wasn't getting the 7-year contract, which is understandable. Young goalie. And again, I bring this back to Flames fans and the Flames doing very, very well. But what Jake Oettinger is capable of, like And I don't know if you subscribe to this theory, but I thought he sucked the life out of the Calgary Flames in the first round. I just wondered how much they had left. for Edmonton in the Battle of Alberta, because as we all know and have figured out many, many times, especially in this market, you know, Mika Kiprusoff, all he did back in the day, to an extent, Jacob Markstrom, I know he struggled in last year's playoffs. If you have a hot goalie or run into a hot goalie, you could be in trouble. And I thought Calgary narrowly escaped that series with Dallas. And I think if we were to speak 5 years from now, I think Jake Oettinger could be in the conversation for one of the top goaltenders on the planet. I think the potential is there. Do you?
Yeah, I do. Listen, he's big enough, so you have that, you know, organic check mark right there, no problem. He showed that he can do it in big moments, and it's not only this. Like, I remember talking to Saad Youssef from who covers the Stars down in Dallas, and he was talking about, you know, before this he was in the Final Four tournament as a freshman and playing in overtime, and he was in the World Junior gold medal game in overtime, and was able to get wins in both those situations. Like, he's a guy who's played in big pressure situations and was not fazed at all by the big light of the Stanley Cup playoffs and playing in front of a rowdy Flames fan base. I thought he was the best player in the first round of the playoffs. And
agreed.
He probably maybe did derail the Flames a little bit. Like, the thing I can subscribe to there is I thought that was going to be a quicker series. And if that's a quicker series, maybe you have Chris Tanev more available in that series against the Edmonton Oilers, which doesn't cause such a shuffle of the blue line and a strain and a little bit more of guys that are probably, you know, batting outside of their comfort zone type of thing, right? Like, it was a little bit more Michael Stone than we had seen in the regular season for sure. And don't get me wrong, I loved Michael Stone in the playoffs. I thought he was actually a really nice piece for the Flames and a pretty effective player. But he's not Chris Tanev when it comes to the skating, the defending, and that's one of the places that Connor McDavid and Leon Draisaitl kind of started to torch the team. Connor would move the puck up and down the ice, and Leon would find his spot, and he was just so strong and sturdy that no one could really get him off the puck, and boom, it was, what, 30 points in two series? Like, it was insane.
Yeah, they really lost their way, I felt, offensively and mostly defensively for what they put together in the regular season, right? I think everybody thinks Daryl Sutter and says, wow, phenomenal defensive team. And I think that certainly was a story in the regular season, 9 shutouts for Jacob Markstrom. It was just a bit of a different tune. And I think the contrast from Series 1 to Series 2 was clearly night and day. But I, again, to your point, I think Dallas contributed a long way in sort of opening up some issues. And I thought in general that series against Dallas was so fascinating to bet on, like the under 5.5, where we kept expecting the explosion for Calgary. Just never really happened, right? I think the majority of the guys were stymied, Gaudreau, Kachuk, Lindholm. They just couldn't find it offensively. And I think a big reason why was Dallas holding them to the outside, but also Jake Oettinger. You know, 30-15-1 last year, a 9-14 save percentage. To get him in at a 3-year contract at a 4 mil AAV, I think is right in line with what Carter Hart got and Mackenzie Blackwood a couple of years ago. Like, if the contract comps are there, I think it's an easier contract to put together. And I already start to wonder, you know, say Spencer Knight has, you know, a steady and solid year for the Florida Panthers. You would think the contract comp is there to make that next contract extension coming off the ELC for Florida. You know, I think you made a point yesterday that really stood out for me too. Like, you know, comparables, I should say, and, you know, setting a precedence. I think in the NHL more than most leagues, I think contracts work themselves out. And then like a player will come in and build off that. Like, for example, you know, the McDavid contract is probably the bar for like a Nathan MacKinnon, right?
Yep. 100%.
You know, it's one of those things where I think it becomes a factor in negotiations. And again, it's stunning to me to believe that going into last year, Rosie, you know, Oettinger was the 4th-string goalie. I remember talking about this ad nauseum, the fact that in training camp, like, he was destined for the AHL when he was ready for the NHL. Now, in the long run, it works out, but they had Bishop, Hudobin, Holtby, and Oettinger, and then, you know, Wedgwood comes in later in the year. So, like, the goaltending carousel has changed significantly in Dallas, and we'll see what Pete DeBoer can do there.
Yeah, well, that's an interesting thing as well. Like, when I saw Pete DeBoer getting signed with Dallas, I was like, I don't know if I love that for Jake Oettinger either, right? Like, Pete's been one of the guys who can ride his goalies, and he's not afraid to ask for more from his goaltenders via the media or whatever kind of avenue he chooses to go. I thought the choice of the head coach there was a little bit interesting, because to me, the one thing that you kind of want to maintain for the Dallas Stars from this past season is Jake Oettinger. Like, yes, Jason Robertson was a great story in the whole nine yards there, but you win with guys in net rather than guys on the wing. So for me, the priority was always, okay, now that Jake Oettinger is here, how do we keep him here? And I was never sure if that was the coaching choice I would have gone down, but nevertheless, I'm going to be really interested to see like what his workload is and how he kind of handles it. Because like you mentioned, you threw his record out there. He wasn't getting the 55, 60 starts like a lot of guys around the NHL. And granted, he's a younger goaltender. It's appropriate that he didn't. But I'm intrigued to see if he is one of those guys who can kind of be an absolute workhorse in the NHL and a dying breed.
For some reason, I keep going back to Connor Hellebuck, and maybe it's, you know, the only similarity is that they're both American. They both had pedigree when they were young, start at the world junior level. I don't know why. I just keep going back to that level. And I think obviously like there's a lot to strive for if you want to be the next Connor Hellebuck and one of the top American goaltenders out there. But I think certainly Jake Oettinger is on his way, but I think you're spot on with Dallas. Like, they lack the sex appeal of maybe other teams. I think if you did some digging, and a lot of people will, like Jason Robertson's a guy in his first couple of years averaging a point a game around there, like, which is a bit shocking. Roope Hintz is another guy who every game you watch, it's like 2 points a night. And I think automatically people look at Dallas Rosie and are like, oh, Tyler Seguin, Jamie Benn, you know, Miro Heiskanen, more so the other two. It's just more so of a thing of like who's been on this team for a while, but they're not really the top contributors anymore. I think Dallas in general is just a team I really can't put my finger on, I think, when it comes to the Western Conference.
Average, milk toast, just they're there. They have a handful of decent players. They have role players that, yeah, they're NHL players, and they're mostly veterans. I guess Raffle's gone now, but I thought he was pretty good last year, and they've got kind of those type of guys. And then you've got Seguin and Ben, and frankly, I think that's where it's kind of the crux of the team, in the sense that both those guys are overpaid for the production that they're giving at this point in the career. At the start of those deals, those were great contracts, don't get me wrong, but at this point, with everything that Tyler Seguin's had to put his body through, and just with kind of the game speeding up and Jamie Benn not speeding up, those contracts have kind of looked hard. They're some of the harder contracts to work around in the NHL, I would say. And I don't know if this team can really get into a spot where they're very competitive until they kind of get a little bit of the salary situation evened out. Because this is a year where, you know, Oettinger at $4 million, sure, that's good. But that's only going to be for 3 years, and I don't know if I see that as the window here, because, like I said, you're still going to have Seguin and Ben for those 3 years. Robertson's going to be there, but who else is going to be there? Do they have great prospects? They got decent prospects. Ty Dellandrea showed decent in the playoffs. Maverick Bork is a former first-round pick that was really good in the QMJHL and the QMJHL and the Memorial Cup final this past season. But apart from that, you know, it's Heiskanen, it's Hintz, it's Robertson, it's Oettinger, and then what? So I don't know. And they play in a tough division. So I don't know. I could see Dallas being one of those kind of bubble teams where I don't think they're going to draft high, probably in the teens, and I probably don't think that they're going to be in the playoffs or maybe even in a race at the end.
Yeah, sniffing around. And I would just, in a perfect world, love them to open it up a bit, right? Like, not to the Lindy Ruff type days where it was like 6-5 fire wagon hockey, but more so in the middle of what they had under Rick Bowness. But unfortunately, we're not going to see it, obviously, here with Pete DeBoer. It's fascinating, too, that there are 13 RFAs left and 7 are on Canadian teams. So we mentioned Rogitska, Ryan McLeod with Edmonton, then Ottawa's got a couple, Eric Branstrom and Alex Formanton, Montreal, Kirby Dock and Caden Primo. I know our very own Eric Engels of Sportsnet reporting, I believe last night, that Kirby Dock could be closing in on an extension. And then Rasmus Sandin with the Maple Leafs. And I think they have their own issues with the cap, too. And It just seems like every player who gets into negotiations with Toronto tries to take them to the cleaners, which I think is hilarious, right? Like, you want a couple guys to maybe take that discount because you drafted them or something. And I understand everybody's entitled to their money, but it always seems like Toronto's got a couple guys every offseason where they're like, oh no, this guy wants X amount of dollars, and can we afford him? Can we keep him?
Well, it's always the changing of the guard and that type of, you know,
yeah.
these seasons, I guess, or this time of the off season. I'm intrigued by some of these restricted free agents. Like, there hasn't been a lot of history of players that are in this type of situation that don't show up to camp because they don't have a deal yet and they feel mm-hmm. like that's kind of how they're going to leverage themselves. And I always feel like it just puts them so far behind the eight ball. And then you exactly. have the excuse yep. the coach can use and say, well, he wasn't at camp here, right? Why wasn't he at camp? Well, he should have been at camp. And you just open yourself up for so many negative situations, I find. So, I don't know. It's tough because you're a young player and you're trying to get what's yours and you're trying to get paid and all that type of things. But I think there's a lot of situations here where, you know, I side with the team in a lot of these situations. You're at a point where you don't have arbitration rights because you're that new in your NHL career. Go play. Just go play. Go be around your team and go play. That is kind of where I come down on it. Full stop. End of story.
No, I'm totally with you. Like, and I don't know where along the way, well, I do know, but like, it's become a young man's game, right? Where yep. the league is now dominated by kids who are 18, 19, 20, as opposed to back in the day where it was like early 30s, late 20s. Mm-hmm. And with that comes the fact that they're getting paid right away. Like, I'm so there with you where a guy, granted, will have a really, really exceptional season, hasn't won much, didn't do much in terms of awards and milestones, and all of a sudden he's making 8-9 schmil, right? Like, where's the incentive to be better and better and better? And I understand these are pro athletes. They're going to work their bags off every off season and strive to be the best. But I like sort of the pipeline before. Like, baseball, to an extent, I like the way it works. To that point, I think there's a way that they can work around the fact that you don't really get paid until like 7-8 years into your mm-hmm. career. But like, hockey's the opposite side of the spectrum where like you have, you know, one good year, then the second year is pretty good too, or vice versa. And then all of a sudden you're making 7-8 mil and you're already locked into your new contract before you start your third year of your entry level contract. Like, these guys are getting paid big time right away. I mean, they must love their agents and the union.
Well, Tage Thompson is a kind of a situation like that.
Yeah.
Like, he's had one year where he mm-hmm. really popped. Now, granted, he was already on his second contract. It wasn't his ELC anymore. It was his fourth year in the NHL, although some of those years weren't necessarily full years. And look at what he got. You know, granted, this is a guy who scored 38 goals. He had 78 points in 68 points in 78 games, playing on the top line, found a hole there. You have to overpay to keep guys, you know, a la Zach Werenski in Columbus. But at the same time, you look at that and you go, man, $7 million, that's a lot of money. That's a lot of your cap for a guy who's popped once. Like, it's a pretty serious gamble to roll if you're an NHL general manager. And I don't know, like, of the guys that are on the list, like the contract that Eric Engels is thinking about or kind of reporting yeah. for Kirby Doc, that's appropriate. That's mm-hmm. I'm very much okay with that. Like, unless you are one of these guys who's coming out and you're putting up 85 points in your second year in the NHL and you're having another a very strong year in your first year, I don't know. I'm very much in the camp that go keep playing. Don't sign for too long, year or two, especially right now when you're in a flat cap and you expect the cap in 2 or 3 years to skyrocket.
Yeah.
Cash in then. So, yeah, with these 13 RFAs, like, you look at the list and there's some guys that I say, like, yeah, I don't necessarily know what they're doing, but Mikey Anderson and Sean Durzi, like, those are two yeah. guys that this past season were extremely key cogs to the team. Like, those aren't guys who are on the periphery. Those are guys who are skating 20 minutes a night. They played like 60 games with the NHL club and played a lot of the postseason as well. Those are guys that if I'm LA, maybe I'm looking at something more long-term. Maybe I want to give a bit of money to, but I'd still be a little bit cautious with it.
Yeah, the prominent names are taken care of. And, you know, I think you make an excellent point, and I think there's been precedence for this, that if you want to get into a, you know, a 15-round bout in boxing and decipher and go long-term over a mil or half a million bucks, I just think you put yourself against the eight ball before the season even starts, right? And you just end up, more times than not, not really, really catching up, if at all, until like halfway through the year, right? I think players realize that. And also the fact that, like, you know, there's been multiple years of this where, again, there's sort of something set up in the fact that we've seen this before and they're comparable players, right? Like, the negotiations have changed quite a bit. You're either getting a bridge or you're getting a deal for potential or progression. I think along those lines, that's something that happened to Tate Thompson, right? The fact that he comes off a brilliant breakout season and they pay him for potential and progression. And then you look, for example, at the Kirby Doc report, a contract, I believe it was 4x3.5, takes him to one more remaining season of RFA. He's battled inconsistency issues so far in his time in Chicago, and also coming off some injuries and some serious injuries at that. So it makes a lot of sense. But I think he has the potential to grow into maybe a number one center. And I'm very curious to see what happens to Kirby Doc and year one and with the Montreal Canadiens. Now, did you have a chance to see that big trade in the NBA yesterday?
I did. Donovan Mitchell goes from the Utah Jazz to the Cleveland Cavaliers. I can't do that word. It's one of those mental blocks. Plus a couple other players. What, 3 first-round picks, 2 pick swaps?
You know, that reminds me of, I don't know if this is the same in your high school. Back in the day, like way back, and I hate doing this, but I've been doing this a lot this week. Do you ever remember the people who souped up their cars like Cavaliers?
Yeah, sure.
It was a thing where they put spoilers on them.
Cavaliers, not necessarily.
Civics?
I'm trying to remember. Civics, yeah. Integras? I had a Jetta that I put a custom shifter on.
There you go.
Yeah. I know what we're talking about, for sure.
Back in the day, right? Every time I see the word Cavalier. But yeah, you look at this deal, it made me laugh, and more so because of the New York Knicks. They strike out more than Joey Gallo did with the New York Yankees, man. Like, Donovan Mitchell has been linked to the Knicks. Like, it was almost like a foregone conclusion he was going to be a New York Knick at some point in time. And out of all, like, this guy thinks he's going there. I think a couple months back, even a month ago, there was a video of him wearing like a Knicks sweatshirt. And then next thing you know, it's like, oh, yeah, bud, you're going to Cleveland.
You're going to Cleveland. Like, enjoy.
Yeah, it's like going to Columbus in the NHL. Not to that degree. I love Columbus way more than I liked Cleveland. I went for the ALCS a couple years back, the Jays and the Cleveland Guardians, we'll call them. But I just think the NBA is so compelling, man. Like, not a day goes by where there's a new soap opera. And then you get Stephen A. Smith, who's like a diehard New York Knicks fan, come on and say, here we go again. Like, I can't remember the last time the New York Knicks, well, I can, where they were really relevant and a legitimate threat. Like, we're dating back to, like, the Sprewell days, Allen Houston, even Patrick Ewing. For some reason, that team is just cursed where they're, and we know how, you know, how the formula works in the NBA. Certainly, we saw it here in Canada. Like, you have to have superstar players. Now, the Raptors had Kawhi Leonard, who was top 3 at the time in the NBA. But you need superstars. And then all of a sudden, you know, Spider Mitchell goes to Cleveland and they're starting to build something where I think Cleveland's only been relevant in, say, the last 20 years because some guy named LeBron James played there a couple times. And now all of a sudden, I think they're viewed as one of the upper echelon teams, not there yet with Boston or like a Brooklyn, if they can put it all together, or like a Milwaukee, but they're going to be in that convo with the Raptors for that next wave. And I just think it's so fascinating, like, compared to, say, the NHL or Major League Baseball, you can't trade draft picks. Like, when teams commit to teardowns, Rosie, in the NBA, they commit. Like,
oh, yeah.
I think you look at Utah, who's been a staple in the postseason for years. They've now accumulated 8 first-rounders in this offseason. Patient zero for COVID, Rudy Gobert was dealt like 2 months ago, too. Remember that?
Yeah. Oh, you never forget. I remember that. Man, I'll never forget that for sure. That one press
on the mic
conference touches all the mics. 2 days later, shuts down the world. Oh, goodness. Oh. My goodness. But yeah, this is a wild trade. Like, yeah. I think that, you know, market here in Calgary, maybe not a ton of people who follow the NBA
Yeah.
Do you want to, like, so could you compare this to an NHL trade? So if this was a trade in the NHL, what would this be like? Like, what is Donovan Mitchell like? What is he a top five? Is he a top 10? What are we thinking here?
I'm trying to think.
I'm putting, like, you on the spot. This is
no worries. I like that. It makes for enticing convo. Like, it's not to the level of what, you know, Calgary did with Florida. I'm just trying to think, like, and so much happens, like, every offseason. I'm trying to think of, like, deals that have happened in the last couple of years where you're like, okay, like, I understand why they're making this happen. I can't really think off the top of my head, but, like, I can tell you, three-time All-Star, he's still relatively young in his career. I think of, you know, the team that he plays for or played for in Utah. Like, I don't know how many eyes they're getting, at least in this country. Mm-hmm. But there is the potential there. So now you pair him in the backcourt with, like, a Darius Garland. You have Jared Allen. You have Evan Mobley, who's a future All-Star as well. And the NBA, we know how it works. I mean, it's rotation-based. You're probably at the best times using seven or eight guys in the postseason. So you get a couple All-Stars on your team. All of a sudden, you're sort of significant in what you can do in the Eastern Conference. And then you add the fact that there's just soap operas left and right. Mm-hmm. No clue what Brooklyn's going to be, right? So, unfortunately, off the top of my head, I really can't think of what kind of player that would compare to in the NHL.
And it's tough because, like, the picks are different because the NBA is only two rounds of the draft. So the first rounders are big. You know, you don't really sit on prospects the way that they do in the NHL, where you kind of have to let them ferment for a couple of seasons. Like, if you're coming out of the NBA draft, you better be ready to play, or you better spend 1 year in the G League, and then you better be ready to play. And even then, it's kind of like, well, you had to go down there. My goodness. So, it's a little different.
Yeah, I would say, just to your point, like, I think right now, just thinking, I would put Spider Mitchell at, like, just above, like, Pierre-Luc Dubois, or, like, just above Patrick Laine, where, you know, the potential is there to be a legit star. They're a star, but there's another level. Mm-hmm. And I think there's potential, obviously, being with Cleveland. So that caught my eye yesterday. The NBA, again, not short on soap operas, but again, we're getting closer to tip off on the season. And there's still a lot to be determined, even with the Los Angeles Lakers. I just think it's such an interesting league, whether you like basketball or not. The soap operas, like, on a daily basis, these guys are all over podcasts. They're ripping each other. This guy was wearing a Knicks sweatshirt a month ago, and then he doesn't go to the New York Knicks. He ends up in Cleveland, out of all places. I thought it was hilarious.
The drama never ends in the NBA, that's for sure. You know who is actually pretty drama-free is the Raptors. But even when Kawhi was leaving, that was pretty dramatic. But prior to that, it was pretty quiet, right?
You want to talk about the unison with this Raptors team? Like, apparently they've been all practicing together in Los Angeles. Like, when's the last time you've ever heard that period for any sporting team where they're getting together at the goodness of their own heart to practice together as a cohesive unit in the offseason
like
to
each
better
other?
Themselves?
What?
Yeah.
They just they like hanging out and working together? That's insane.
It's Nick Nurse has done a tremendous job, man, from, like, when he took over. And they've had, you know, in Toronto, they've had the luxury of having a variety of really, really strong coaches. Dwayne Casey before, where just they're one together. They don't play as individuals. And I think it's lovely to watch. Honestly, when I heard that, I'm like, wow, you never see that, especially in the NBA.
Did you see that video of Scotty Barnes just relentlessly defending James Harden the other day? In some sort of pickup game,
that's what I'm talking about,
man. I was loving it.
That is Nick Nurse basketball to a T. Where you, like, if you don't play that level of defense or try your ass off, you're not playing. Like, I love setting
even in
a precedence
the summer,
like that. Yeah, like, it's, and again, practice makes perfect, right? What are we taught as kids all the time playing pro sports? Like, practice how you want to play. And there's excitement, man, for Scotty Barnes this season. I know that, you know, coming off the Rookie of the Year. Coming off the fact that the Raptors wanted no part of including him in a Durant deal, like, it's the intrigue is building and the fascination is building with this next echelon, you know, upper echelon of prospects with the Raptors, and the fact that, you know, they won the title a couple years back, and next thing you know, they could be involved right back in that conversation. And thanks to Ian as well on Twitter for sending us a picture of his Cavalier. I believe it's his Cavalier, so people know what I'm talking about. With a spoiler, my dude.
Oh, it's got the spoiler on it, too. Well, let's hit the text line real quick before we hit our break and get to the morning report. This one right off the top. This is before the splitter even hit, my Dan. This was from yesterday. Did Nick see Jim Flip-Flops guy yesterday? Also, what is his thought on people who don't wipe the equipment after use? My gym is filled with that.
Especially now, great question. Especially now, post COVID, like I'm not the guy going in there with 17 masks, but like clean, like especially when you sweat. But no, did not see Flip Flops guy yesterday. So I guess it was a scheduled day off at the gym. Maybe he's at the beach.
Yeah, there you go. Someone gets mad every time I mention that Chris Tanev missed the Edmonton series and it might have been different. Excuses. The Oilers went 7 games with the Kings. Leon played on one leg. Nurse had a torn hip flexor. Stop talking about Tanev. No. Yeah.
Oilers
I've never. Probably. It's a 403 number, but I refuse your offer. isn't the Dallas contract situation going to be Calgary in 4 to 5 years? No. Unless Jonathan Huberdeau ends up going down the. To the infirmary the way that Tyler Seguin had to for 3 or 4 years. I don't see it happening. And the Kadri contract is less than Jamie Benn's deal. So I don't necessarily see that being the same boat anchor either. Like, don't get me wrong, if Kadri was up at 9.5, you know, like Jamie Benn's cap hit, I don't know it off the top of my head, but it's definitely not shy. It is 9.5.
Wow. That's a lot of money.
I nailed that.
Tax-free too.
Yeah, exactly. So I don't know. I don't think that the Flames are going to be there in 5 years necessarily. Maybe though. Agree with a lot of what you're saying about Dallas. Tyler and Jamie contracts are brutal, but Dallas has the 5th-ranked farm system, so the future actually looks great once you get out from under a couple bad contracts. And yes, I forgot about Wyatt Johnston, who's a very intriguing prospect, played with
Thomas
Windsor
Harley
this last
too.
Year.
Yeah.
Yeah, Maverick Bork is there as well. Logan Stankoven, who we watched at Team Canada. I'm just checking out Scott Wheeler's rankings. He had them the 10th-ranked system in 2022, but he also has Jake Ottinger listed as their 5th best prospect. He will be graduating, obviously, in the next season. So I wonder if that drops them back maybe a significant amount for the 2023 rankings. But nevertheless, pretty nice little collection at the top four.
Yeah, let's get to break. Let's get. I'm excited for the morning report because, again, it was a quieter night. In sports, I want to see what you brewed up here, my man.
I got a lot. Oh, and someone just texted in Sunfires with an exclamation mark. So I don't know if you customize a lot of Sunfires, but there's that as well. Give us your thoughts on the text line all morning long. Be involved with the show, 960-960. We do have a bunch of guests coming up just after 7 o'clock. We'll tell you all about it after the morning report, but that's coming up next. Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
Oh, you'll love it. A little Paramore to start the show. Blink 182 here. My goodness. Unless you're listening on the podcast, Apple, Google, Spotify, or Amazon, because we can't play the music, it's rights and stuff like that. Then this is just me rambling about nonsense to you, and you should go listen to Misery Business by Paramore, or what is the name of this song by Blink 182, Brody? Feeling This. Love it.
Great song.
It's not my favorite. It's not off my Take Off Your Pants and Jacket, which is their best album, but
no,
I digress. No. Hey, it's a beautiful day. We're getting you set for the weekend. We're getting you set for Labor Day weekend. So let's get into the morning report because there's so much I got to tell you about. And it's brought to you by Motorworks, exceeding all expectations, BMW repairs and service in a state-of-the-art facility where they'll meet and beat all competitors. Quotes on 51st Ave and 3rd Street Southeast.
Marty Rose.
Matt Rose.
Matt Rose. I'm Matt Rose, he's Nick Alberga, welcome inside the Morning Report. And we're actually going to, a little bit of an audible here on you, switch it up to a little bit of hockey. Get the Jake Ottinger story in here for you, right off the top. Jake Ottinger, of course, the goaltender for the Dallas Stars. Flames fans might remember him from the first round of the playoffs, although I would argue, not fondly. The 23-year-old goaltender was the 26th overall pick in 2017. He gets a 3-year contract with a $4 million AAV. That's a $12 million contract. $1 million signing bonus this season with a $1.4 million base salary. So the salary is going to be 4.8 in years 2 and 3, just 2.4 in this year. And he's going to be an RFA. At the end of the contract. But this is a nice deal. 48 games played, 2.52 goals against, and a 914 save percentage. Then he had the sparkling .181 goals against and .954 save percentage in the 7 playoff games before Johnny Gaudreau put it in a teacup and sent the Stars packing at the end of round one.
Yeah, looking forward to seeing the next season for Jake Audrey here with the Dallas Stars, because Pete DeBoer comes in and he has a history, at least recently, with feuding with netminders. I still can't believe, like, he was steadfast on Robin Leonard, and yeah, you had Marc-Andre Fleury, Vegas. Thank you very much.
Scott Wedgwood, the backup. How are we feeling about that tandem?
It's, you know, Wedgwood's actually very, very underrated for a waiver pickup.
He was good after they got him from Arizona, and that's a nice little bit of business by Arizona. Waiver pickup, flip him. He wasn't bad. I don't hate him as a backup, right?
I'm with you. I'm with you.
That's the NHL story. We'll get to some other stuff in a little bit here, but we'll switch it up to the Jays, where after a day off on Thursday, they find themselves in Pittsburgh for a 3-game weekend set. Big series for the Jays, not in the sense that the Pirates are chasing them. They play in the National League, and they're one of the worst teams in baseball. So a series that you should win, that you have to win, especially with the way that the Orioles are starting to cook here. 33 games left for the Blue Jays, and the race for October baseball is on. We talked about it on Thursday's show, Nick. Sweep or nothing? That's how we're feeling here? Especially as you're getting set for a 4-gamer starting Monday with the Orioles.
I'm just hoping they win a game.
Oh,
I cannot prognosticate. I stopped betting on the Jays. Dude, like, last weekend just killed me. I remember I came back on Monday and
you're,
I was so dejected.
A broken man.
Dude, I'm still broken. Like, I'm so excited for this team and where they're going, but I just, the moment I get excited, I get put back and, you know, they just disappoint me. So I'm going to take it game by game. I'm going to hope they, you know, O'Neill Cruz is like 6'6", who hits absolute nukes at shortstop. Hopefully he has an off series and the Jays can just find a way to keep going here, because the Yankees are stinking up the joint. I just want them, A, to make the postseason, B, to have momentum, you know, going into the playoffs.
4:35 first pitch tonight, 4:35 first pitch for game two on Saturday, and then a 10:05 first pitch bright and early Sunday morning to wrap out that series. Only two of the teams in the wild card race for the American League were in Thursday's action, the Mariners and Tigers. One of the contests that contained a team in the race, that would be the Mariners. 25-year-old Logan Gilbert spun a gem for Seattle last night. 6 innings of shutout ball. He allowed 2 hits and 1 walk with 9 strikeouts. And by the time Gilbert left the game, it's too far gone for the Tigers.
Is dropping in for a base hit. Casale hits the bag at third. He comes home. Ty France strikes again. It's a 6-0 Mariners lead in the fourth inning.
Ty France with the RBI single. Pretty strong night for him. He also had a solo home run in the top of the third, his 17th of the season, and that single to score Casale in the fourth. That made it 6-0. The Mariners would go on to win it 7-0 over the lowly Tigers. They sweep. They have won 4 straight games, and they will roll into Cleveland for a 3-gamer with the Guardians. Those same Guardians were hosting the Orioles, trying to win the series after a split in the first 2 games. 25-year-old righty Kyle Bradish on the bump for the O's. Absolutely dealing. 6 innings of shutout ball, 2 hits against 3 walks, 5 strikeouts. Really, minus a couple of walks in the third, it was a pretty spotless outing. Helped that he also had some run support coming in the first inning.
106 off the bat. Nothing to show for it. Here's Santander, a blast to right field, and another home run on the first pitch. Well, the Orioles, who had 2 runs in 24 and two-thirds innings against Shane Bieber's career, have 2 runs on 2 swings in the first inning. Anthony Santander with his 24th.
This was kind of wild. I don't know if you caught this, Nick. So Santander hits his 24th home run there. First pitch swinging home run. Just the second pitch of the game. Cedric Mullins hit a home run on the first pitch of the game as well. So really, back-to-back pitches into the game. Both of them went yard. Ryan Mountcastle would add another solo bomb in the fourth. The Orioles win it 3-0 and get a series victory over Cleveland.
They're on fire, man, and I'm sure you watched the highlights too. Like Gunnar Henderson, we talked about his debut. He turned a nasty unassisted double play. Like the kids these days, this guy's the youngest player in baseball, and just again, there's no pressure on Baltimore. That's why it worries the hell out of me, you know, covering the Blue Jays, because you have a team like Baltimore, who I think, there, you know, there is a comp to draw from like the Jays a couple years ago when they started calling up all their prospects. They're playing free and loose because there's no pressure and expectation to succeed. And we're seeing that to start September now, too.
Baltimore now home for a 10-game homestand. They host the Athletics this weekend, then the Jays, and then the Red Sox. Take a look at the American League wildcard standings. Rays and Mariners neck and neck for the first and second wildcard spots after beating the Marlins Tuesday and Wednesday. They're now home to host the Yankees for a three-gamer. Jays don't have a big shot at the division, but the Rays, if they get some work done this weekend, they might be able to. They're only six games back of the Pinstripes entering action this weekend. So the Rays and Mariners are in the first two wildcard spots. They're both two games up on the Jays in the third spot. Baltimore, just a game and a half back, while the Twins, still three games back. They're in Chicago for a set with the White Sox this weekend. Chicago is over six games back of a wildcard spot, but perhaps a last chance to get themselves into the race this weekend. So a couple instances there with some great pitching performances. Gilbert for Seattle, Bradish for Baltimore, but how about the showing for Spencer Strider of the Braves? Atlanta playing host to the Rockies Thursday night. The 23-year-old righty, speaking of young players, my goodness, absolutely dealing.
Now with a full count, this is the most important pitch of the game.
Let's go!
Sweet 16 for Spencer Strider and a new Atlanta
16 strikeouts for Spencer Strider, a new franchise record for the Braves. Really looking like Kenny Powers out there. Did it over eight innings. He allowed two hits, no walks. The Braves won 3-0. Big win for them. They continue to try to track down the Mets for the NL East division lead. Atlanta now three games back.
Dude, that's impressive. Just to add to like a franchise record, considering who they had. I know they were crafty pitchers back in the day, but Smoltz, Maddox, Glavin, nobody struck out 16 guys. Like, that's impressive to me, man.
It's been a pretty good run. We'll switch to the Stampeders. Yeah. A little bit of football as Labor Day weekend has arrived.
You know, they're a good team, as my coach would say.
One of my favorite sporting weekends on the whole calendar, the Stampeders held their first day of practice on Thursday ahead of Monday's contest at McMahon versus the Elks. Some good and some bad from the injury report on day one. Right tackle Julian Good-Jones and linebacker Jameer Thurman, both full participants. They're expected to be available for this game on Monday. Brandon Dozier was mentioned in the same sentence as those two on Wednesday by head coach Dickinson as far as being activated off the six-game injured list early. But then Dozier ended up being limited on day one. Day two, we'll see if he can get some reps in. The Stamps are hopeful that he'll be able to go, especially with their other two Sam linebackers, Titus Wall and Darius Williams, both injured. Wall in a walking boot, Williams in a sling as they watch practice Wednesday and Thursday. Canadian receivers Richie Sindani and Jalen Philpott, both full participants, although fellow receiver Colton Hunchak missed the session with an illness. Kadeem Carey limited with an ankle issue. Right guard Ryan Sevier also limited with a knee injury. The Elks dealing with their own injury issues. Kenny Lawler going to miss this game and potentially be placed on the six-game injured list. We're expecting another Taylor Cornelius start at quarterback for Edmonton. That'll be at 2:30 Monday. They've had to extend the family zone, which is awesome. You can still get your tickets. Tailgating goes at 12:30 with the Gridiron Gardens as well. Labor Day weekend begins with the Red Blacks and Alouettes at 5 o'clock tonight. Bombers visit the Riders on Sunday. Then it's the Ticats and Argos at 11 Monday ahead of the Stamps and the Elks. A little bit more hockey here for you. On the ice, the Canadian women shut out Sweden 3-0 in the Women's World Hockey Championship quarterfinals. Anne-Renée Desbiens stopped 9 shots for the shutout. Another point for Marie-Philippe Poulin with MPP assisting on Jocelyn Laroque's game-opening and game-winning goal 17 minutes into the game. Canada will now play the Swiss in the semifinals Saturday. The gold medal game will be on Sunday. The other semifinal has the Americans taking on Czechia. The U.S. beat Hungary 12-1 to advance to the semifinal. Hillary Knight became the all-time career points leader in the Women's World Hockey Championship in the victory with a goal and an assist, 87 points, surpassing the previous high of 86 set by Canadian legend Haley Wickenheiser. From the NFL, Russ Wilson's contract extension with the Denver Broncos was officially announced on Thursday.
Show me the money!
5 years, two... You love that one, eh?
Rod Tidwell, that's my guy, man.
5 years, $245 million, including a $50 million signing bonus, $77 million in the first 8 months, and a whopping $165 million in guarantees, all before he's taken one regular season snap with the Broncos. That's just the first of many Brinks trucks backing up to Russ Wilson. It's mansion. 113 victories, one in Super Bowl 48 over the Broncos. Also the most for the quarterback in his first 10 NFL seasons. He's made the Pro Bowl 8 times. He's missed the playoffs just twice in his first decade in the NFL. We had a blockbuster trade in the NBA yesterday. The Jazz sending Donovan Mitchell to the Cleveland Cavaliers. Come on down. Lauri Markkanen, Colin Sexton, and Oche Agbaji go to Utah along with 3 first-round picks and a couple pick swaps. So, huge draft capital going back. I say Cavs with a question mark because he was supposed to get traded to the Knicks. He was supposed to, at least.
Drama.
Ugh. Gotta love the NBA offseason. We'll zip through this. Just a couple more things to get to. Cavalry in action later this weekend.
Football is nice.
As we get into the Labor Day festivities, Cavalry on the road out to the Maritimes. They're going to Halifax. The club's going to battle the Halifax Wanderers in a Monday Labor Day matinee. A noon start here in Calgary, so you can turn that one on the stream. And then maybe do a little tailgating, head down to McMahon. Boom. Mm-hmm. Bingo, bango, mm-hmm. boombo. Tommy Wheeldon Jr. is going to join us just after 8 o'clock to talk about the Cavalry FC. And we love those chats with Tommy. At the U.S. Open, Canadian Denis Shapovalov was in second-round action.
Shapovalov.
The 19th seed in the tournament. He would oust an unseeded opponent in 4 sets last night. 6-4, 4-6, 6-3, 6-2. He'll now face the 9th seed in the 3rd round Saturday morning. He's the lone Canadian on the men's side after Felix Auger-Aliassime knocked out in round 1. On the women's side, no Canadians in action on Thursday. Rebecca Marino has a match against an unseeded opponent just after 10:30. And Bianca Andreescu will battle the 17th seed in one of the 2 evening matches tonight. Also, Serena Williams trying to get to the 4th round. Should be a rowdy match. She's got an unseeded opponent. That'll go around 5 o'clock as well. And we're going to chat with Carolyn Cameron from Sportsnet about the U.S. Open coming up shortly. In golf, it was round 1 of the LPGA Dana Open at Highland Meadows Golf Club in Ohio. 3 Canadians in the field, the best of which is Maud Amie LeBlanc, who is 1 under. She's 5 strokes back of the leader. Maddie Zarek and Brooke Henderson enter round 2 at 1 over par. And it's the 4th LIV golf event this weekend.
If I can hit it down the middle of the fairway, that's great. But again, with the driver right now, the driver sucks.
Bryson's driver sucks. They're at the International. It's outside Boston, Massachusetts. Cam Smith's going to make his LIV Tour debut. An 11-15 shotgun start for the first of 3 rounds today. And that's it.
And good night and good luck to you, sir.
That is the morning report for Motorworks. Exceeding all expectations, BMW repairs and service in a state-of-the-art facility where they'll meet and beat all competitors' quotes on 51st Ave and 3rd Street, Southeast. So we just told you about the 2 guests that we're going to have at 7:30 and 8. Carolyn Cameron going to join us at 7:30. Tommy Wheeldon going to join us at 8. But Nick, do you want to set up perhaps our very next guest who you've wrangled to kick off hour number 2?
Yeah, I was going to say, you know, he's a big-time golfer, and you're going to love this. Oh. Is our next guest and our first guest batting leadoff of the Washington Capitals, Dylan Strome, the brother of Ryan and Matt. Ryan, of course, siding with the Anaheim Ducks, so we're going to have Dylan on. And I mentioned earlier in the week that I used to be a range attendant, and back in the day, this was like 11, 12 years ago, at a club link course, and the Stromes used to be there a lot, Ryan and Dylan. And so now, fast forward, they're both NHLers. Matt's, finding his way as well. And Dylan signs with Washington. You know, he had a pretty good year in the second half, specifically with Chicago. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, Dylan Strome's coming up here.
Yeah, it was weird. That coaching change is the strangest thing. We'll take a break. Dylan Strome joins the program next. Sportsnet 960, The Fan.